It was nearly 3,000 years ago when human beings started asking the really big questions. Why are we here? That's the name of this bit of a Philip Glass movie score. It was the fearless Greek philosophers Anaximander and Thales who first wondered about the deep structure of the natural world in non-religious terms. They were the inspiration for our next guest to devote her life to science, the ancient Greeks, and one very modern scientist, the late Carl Sagan. Asking big questions was the mission of Sagan's 1980 PBS series Cosmos, the most watched series in the history of public television. Now, Sagan's fearless wife, Anne Druyan, is finally relaunching that series, Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, this Sunday on Fox. Druyan told us that Sagan would find much to like in the new series, even if he would consider that there is much work yet to be done to make the understanding of science a real priority for Americans today.
I think he would be worried about the last 15 years when we've been in a kind of decline scientifically in terms of our willingness to invest in science, in terms of science as something that we valued culturally and that people were aware of. But I totally feel that the pendulum is swinging back our way and that we're ready to look at the cosmos, the universe, nature, and see it as it really is. And so, yeah, I think Carl, if he were alive, he would feel that we were trending in the right direction.
Was the original Cosmos an attempt to initiate a kind of critical mass, a tipping point in the culture regarding science? And if so, what do you think Carl Sagan would think about the impact of that series looking today?
Well, I never speak for Carl, but I can tell you what I feel, and that is that the spreading effect, the kind of propagating impact of Cosmos is truly extraordinary. There are more people today who are watching Cosmos, whether it be, you know, on any kind of electronic device possible. The number of excerpts from Cosmos on YouTube are downright astronomical. The email that I receive from all over the world usually comes from the young. And so in many ways, I think Carl is more loved than he ever was before. I think the impact of the pale blue dot is something that you can see everywhere. And, you know, it was his dream that we were in the process of becoming an intercommunicating organism. And he died before the internet reached the fullness that we have now. And I think that would have been a fulfillment of a dream for him, that there would be a coalescing community of people on Earth who were willing to think long-term, to act in defense of the environment and the tiny pale blue dot. So, you know, he would have been thrilled to be here at this moment, and I think he would feel that our original series had exceeded our wildest expectations in every way. And then this new series, which grows out of it, but which is completely new, is another example of the power of his original vision.
Would you say the mission of the new series is to mobilize those digital tools and social networking channels that he didn't experience directly, but really do make the argument that we are an interconnected organism on this pale blue dot, and that a search for an understanding of science is a collective global enterprise?
I couldn't have said it better myself. I agree with you completely. And, you know, this is the biggest rollout of a television series in history. 175 countries in 45 languages premiering in, you know, just a few twirls of the planet. I mean, when you think of what Fox and National Geographic have done to bring Cosmos to every conceivable part of the world, it makes me feel like we have very powerful allies in this dream, awakening people to the ancient continuity that science reveals, to the vastness of the universe and its grandeur, more beautiful, more inspiring than any story we could make up. You know, if Cosmos should awaken a new community of people who recognize how tiny and fragile our world is and what our responsibilities are to that ancient continuity, I will be truly happy.
This Neil deGrasse Tyson fellow, he's a friend of ours. I know he met
Carl Sagan a long, long time ago, and I suspect he's a friend of yours.
Oh, he is a friend of mine for more than 20 years.
Well, he it certainly has some gestures that, you know, to the camera, his eyes looking at the camera, his sort of direct address of the audience is
he's alive.
He's alive.
The man is alive. And that's one of the reasons. Look, that's one of the failures of the scientific community. You know, and Carl was punished for this by the scientific community. Because if a man steps forward or a woman steps forward and wants to connect with the public and has that kind of small d democratic vision that this is our birthright, this knowledge belongs to all of us. The public pays for these big scientific projects. It pays for all of this stuff. Why should it be the preserve of a select few? Look, the hope of the future is that the information that has been gathered by the generations of searchers who we celebrate in the Cosmos series, that it needs to belong to all of us. It needs to be widely distributed, not in a single place or a few places for the elite, for the select few. It has to belong to all of us, and that's Neil and Carl and me. That's our ethos, that the more widely dispersed it is, the more people will be there to stand up for it when it is being assaulted, when the next time we want to retreat into fantasy and self-deception.
Because, see, you know, that's the thing that shocks me. And it's a head-scratcher for me, and I don't want to ruin your day, but I am surprised that Fox would take such a leadership role on this when on the Fox News Channel, it's like, you know, 24/7 climate change denial.
I know. But why are you surprised, John, when you know that Family Guy and The Simpsons have been very subversive and wonderfully critical of all kinds of foolishness for, you know, more than a decade? And actually, for the first time in all this time, a major broadcast network is choosing to do an hour of science in prime time.
That's great.
And that is, you know, that hasn't happened in my adult life, I don't think.
So before we go, I do really think that the Cosmos mission and Carl Sagan's mission was about mentoring as much as it was about science. The idea that one person with a persuasive view can put something like science in your blood and you never forget it. And that's, you know, something that he did and something that he inspired others to do. Do you have a mentor that you can talk to us about, someone who inspired you to get involved in science either a long time ago or not so long ago?
Well, a long time ago, I became interested in the history of science because I was fascinated by the idea of the first people, the Ionian scientists of ancient Greece, the first people who wanted to understand how nature was put together without resorting to the shorthand of God must have wanted it that way or God did it. The idea of really interrogating nature fascinated me. But as for, you know, a mentor, Carl, you know, just, it's amazing when you fall in love with someone who exceeds your wildest dreams to such an extent that you don't have to pretend to yourself anymore about anything to make yourself feel good. It's a great liberation. And if that man happens to be a person for whom it really matters what's true, it changes you. It makes you, you know, less afraid, more committed to what you're doing. And it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me was to spend 20 years working with, loving Carl Sagan, creating a family with him. And that is really, that's the candle burning for me. That's the flame. You know, the thing that was so great about being with him was that he always felt that, you know, I was the teacher. So it wasn't a mentorship, but wow, it was truly the deepest kind of marriage I can imagine.
Well, you guys knocked it out of the park the first time around with the Cosmos. It sounds like you're getting ready to do it again. Anne, thanks so much.
So good to be talking with you, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.